Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Pink University Blog Talk Radio Program, where we reignite your passion, your purpose, and your play. Find us at www.hotpinkyou.com. Take it away, ladies.
Yes, welcome to Hot Pink University Blog Talk Radio Life Classes. I'm Christy Bemis, author, speaker, psychotherapist, and an Ignite Your Life coach. You are in the right place if you're wanting to bust some myths this morning. I'm so glad you're here, or if you're listening to it in the evening or afternoon on your own time via the recording, I am super glad you're here. This is going to be a loaded episode full of five things you wish somebody in your life at some point would have told you or could have told you sooner. There are things that I've stumbled across or learned along the way regarding relationships, love, sex, and intimacy. I'm so glad you're here. Welcome. Grab your journal, grab a pen. I always encourage you to take notes and just really dive into 30 minutes of a life class, gifting yourself with this time and this energy that you're directing towards your own growth and your own self-care. You can find more about me at www.hotpinkyou.com. And yes, I am a sex educator and relationship coach, recently going through the Somatica method of relationship and intimacy building. And I'm putting all of that knowledge, as I'm a lifelong learner. It's one of my when I'm developing my wellness model, which I'm hoping to release in the next year, it's one of my biggest passions, is that we always maintain a growth mindset and always maintain our curiosity. So you're here because you're a curious person and you also have growth mindset. And that's why it's so exciting to be talking to you today. Life classes through my company, Hot Pink University, are just little nuggets that we need to know in life as women, but we're not necessarily taught in school. So we're going to dive into five myths that we're going to be busting today. I put a little teaser out there. Why does he do that? And so it's focusing a little bit on what the difference is between men and women. And we'll talk a little bit about that today. And myth around your own libido as you move through life. A myth that we're going to bust around conflict in relationships. So if you're a conflict avoider, or you don't like conflict, this is a great myth to bust for you. And also a little myth about your turn on. How does that sound? A little myth busting around your turn on. And a yummy little myth about solo growth and work on yourself. Is that fun? Beautiful. Let's get started. What I wish I knew. What I wish I knew then. The first myth that we're going to be busting is that the myth around why does he do that? And so often, we're butting heads in a heterosexual couple with our partner because men and women are wired so differently. There's a great book out there, two great books out there called The Male Brain and The Female Brain that I read years ago. And I actually am changing my language around this, and I'm actually saying testosterone-oriented brains and estrogen-oriented brains, because that's really the key of what we're talking about. Each of us, from a non-binary standpoint, have different levels of testosterone and estrogen that influence our brain at different parts of our lives. And when we're born, we're all oriented towards an estrogen-oriented brain until testosterone, given our chromosomal, makup, decides to flood around 8 weeks in utero, the brain, and it actually kills off various parts, which allows room for testosterone-oriented parts to grow at a bigger rate. And it's all influenced by you know, our chromosomes and how much testosterone is going to be released and how much estrogen is going to be released at a certain time. And it really influences our brains. And so what I think is interesting about this myth is, you know, when we say, why does he do that? What we're really challenging is, why does your testosterone brain work the way that it does? And this really helped support me in all of my relationships with men, including, you know, partners, including my brother, including my stepfather and my dad and my own son. Why does he do that? Because it's a testosterone orientation in his brain. And also we have a lot of socialization as men and women to be and act a certain way. And so why does he do that? I get this question most around, I want him to be more in touch with his feelings. That's when I get this question most in my psychotherapy practices. Why can't he be more sensitive, feeling, intuitive, and social like me? And here's the thing, because our estrogen-oriented brains wire us to be more sensitive, more feeling, more intuitive, and more social. It's just the truth. It is truth, real talk here, that estrogen really supports a part of our brain called the insula, which is super responsible for intuition and that gut feeling that we have as women. That's why we have a higher sense often of intuition. Not to say that some men don't have a great gut sense intuition, but that would be, you know, based on testosterone levels and based on estrogen levels at various times in your life, right? And so it is something that's truly wired in us as women, and it's something that's truly cultivated. We can also deaden that wiring by not trusting our gut, being socialized as women to, like, shut up, sit down, dim ourselves. And so we, like, you know, dim that light around our intuition guidance. And so we can cultivate the different parts of our brain, or we can deaden them. And what happens is, our brains need to fire to, like, wire, right? And so if we are constantly shutting down our intuition voice as women, we're constantly being told, no, shut up, I'm not going to listen to that. That wiring around our intuition, you know, decreases. It's not as, there's not as many neural pathways firing. There's not as many myelination, which is the insulation, making sure those neural pathways are really protected, right? And so that's one thing around intuition, but also we are a estrogen-oriented brain. The estrogen fluctuates quite radically in a cycle, and it creates different feelings. That hormone change and shift creates different feeling landscapes for women than it does for men. And oftentimes women can be really sensitive at various times of those shifting cycles. So why does he do that? One of the things that, you know, a woman, her brain can multitask a little differently than what a male's brain can, where he becomes very unifocused. And so an example I love to use in psychotherapy, why does he do that? I left him home to, like, fix the dishwasher, but meanwhile the kids were upstairs, like, creating havoc in their bedrooms, and the dog wasn't let out all day. Because when you left, you told him, I want the dishwasher fixed before I get home. And men can get very zoomed into that one project at the expense of all others. Where a woman can multitask a little bit better because her brain is wired to do so, right? And so we can not only be, like, fixing the washer, but we're also, like, one ear is in another ear is like, oh, yeah, the dog is whining at the door. I got to go let him out. And it's not like, I'm not saying at all, like, women are better, men are worse. You know, what I'm saying is, why as women do we get frustrated? It's like as soon as we get in partnership with a man, we spend a lot of energy on trying to change him and trying to make him more like us. And what if we embrace the beauty in our relationships of our differences? What if it took a certain amount of acceptance to be really in love with somebody and have an unconditional positive regard for them? And it can become very like demasculating to come in and be like, be more like me, right? I'm a woman. Here is how I want you to function as a man. And so I want to bust this myth that we're different. Let's respect our differences. Let's understand our differences and that they're not going to be the same experiences when seen through the lens of a testosterone-oriented brain or an estrogen-oriented brain. Can we just respect that difference and learn how to get curious with each other more? Myth busted. We're different. Let's let it be different. All right, let's move to conflict. Who likes conflict? Raise your hand. Some people really do, right? Some people really enjoy conflict and provoking and poking at things. I think it makes people that like that feel pretty alive, you know? I also think that that's really important in relationships because conflict in all relationships is inevitable. And I think a lot of times when couples come in, they say that the conflict is bad and it's the sign that our relationship is failing. I actually love working with couples that are in high or moderate conflict because I know that they're still tuned in. I know that they're still jazzed about each other. I know that they're still plugged into one another. When couples come in after years and years of not handling conflict better, and they're apathetic towards each other, and they're unplugged. That's a big hill. It's not insurmountable, but it's definitely a big, big therapeutic hill to kind of peek over and get to the other side of things, because first you have to work with the couple to get them to be interested even in working on things. But couples that are in high conflict, moderate conflict, this is not actually a problem. When we look at the Chinese symbol for conflict, it's actually created by two symbols together. One is danger, and that's where conflict gets kind of scary, right? Nobody wants to be yelled at. Nobody likes high anger, high energy, right? And the other symbol is opportunity, though. So conflict, when you learn as couples how to handle it well, leads to great opportunities of discovering something new about each other. How we have conflict is important. If you read things around John Gottman, he has great research, great work out there. It's somebody that I'm trained, level one trained in. He talks about the four horsemen, that criticism leads to defensiveness, which then leads to contempt of one another, which then leads to stonewalling. Stonewalling is we avoid this topic now from now on because we can't get through it. We don't feel successful with it. We never get to the end of a resolution that feels good for both of us, so let's just stonewall it, right? And what he talks about in his research is that couples that have these four horsemen are at greater likelihood of separating. It's just a fact. So when couples come in and I'm watching them, I'm assessing for all of these things, right? When I see them, I let them know and I reflect to them, this is what I'm seeing. You have all four of these, or you have three of them, or you have two of them that will certainly lead to the third one soon. And it's what they need to work on and what they need to clean up around conflict. And our conflict often is very influenced by our attachment styles. If you've ever done any kind of perusing around attachment styles, this is amazing stuff for your relationship regarding, like, if you're more of an anxious attachment style, how you handle conflict, versus if you're more of an avoidant attachment style, how you might handle conflict, versus if you're more of a disorganized attachment style, how conflict is handled for you. And then there's secure attachment, right? And these attachment styles are created very early on, but we bring them way to the forefront of our relationships, and they play out in constancy. When we look at Harville Hendrix's work along with his wife Helen McKelvey Hunt and their work around imago work, right? When you look at work that they've done around this, they've created solutions around how to handle conflict, and they talk about the negative the zero negativity zone that you need to create around your relationship. When you look at Stan Tatkin's work around attachment styles, and you look at like his analogy to the island and the wave, and the great explanation that he creates around that, he talks about how to, you know, create that relationship bubble of how you protect yourselves in times of stress, right? How can you create that relationship bubble? So how we have conflict is often influenced by attachment styles. It's super important for couples to learn what is my attachment style and how is it influencing this current thing. The other work that I love that's out there is, and I don't exactly know the name of it, but my friend Ritu Chandler works with this concept around how we make decisions and our decision-making styles, that there's like six of them. And some people can be really impulsive decision makers. Some people can be really research-oriented decision makers. And how people make decisions often lead to high conflict. And it plays out in our marriages too. If one of you is more research-based, like let's look at all 10 styles of cars we're thinking of, and the other is, you know what, I just want to get this done, and I don't like car shopping, I'm just going to go out and buy a car, and then that feels like super like scary and like anxious for the other person that's more research-oriented, it can lead to higher conflict. So knowing how your decision-making style plays out. So the busting of the myth is this, all said and done. Conflict is a sign of a healthy relationship. It's a sign that you're connected and that this is important enough to spend time and energy on. It's actually a sign that you're plugged into your life and your relationship. So myth busted. It's learning the tools of how you handle the conflict and always doing it, no matter what the conflict is, the same way, using the same tools all of the time. Myth busted. All right, ladies, if your sex is down, if your libido is down, and you're thinking to yourself, this must be the natural aging process, this must be my hormones, I don't want to be sexually involved with my partner anymore, I'm not interested in sex anymore, let's bust that myth, because often what this is a sign of is not about your libido being down, and sometimes it's not even hormones, and your hormones actually can be down and you can still be sexually plugged in, right? It's not a myth that we age out of our sexuality. You can remain sexually active all the way into your 90s and 100s, right? And oftentimes what it is a sign of truly is boredom. I'm bored. I'm not getting the cake I like. I'm getting the cake maybe you like, but I'm not getting the cake I like in the bedroom. Or it's a sign of mismatched style, just not getting what you want or need, not getting excited. And here's the thing. It's not as simple as let's spice it up in the bedroom, right? It's not as simple as doing a top 10 tips from a magazine of how to make it sizzle in the bedroom. It's not as simple as that. Sexuality is actually a really complicated and complex thing. And sometimes we might need sex coaching. And yes, that is a real thing. And it can be done virtually. It can be done, via the Zoom method. That's how I do all of my sex coaching and sex education and relationship coaching, unless I'm doing psychotherapy. But even my psychotherapy practice has moved to telehealth for the most part. And it has been incredibly successful. People think, how can you convey feelings and emotions across the screen? Trust me, you can. I can manipulate two people if they're sitting in a way that like is not working for the dynamic that I'm trying to model for them. I can actually ask them to move around, move the camera, move their bodies, face each other. Let's have a different arrangement with one another for our session, right? I can actually talk to them about how to touch each other across the screen for maximum capacity and growth. So there's things out there. You don't have to just believe the myth that I'm aged and therefore sex is no longer important for me. So let's bust that myth, because in my new wellness model that I'm creating, sexuality is one of the key components that is important for our wellness and our health across our lifespan. It is actually, there's so many health benefits to it, so many health benefits to your body, your mind, but also your spirit and your creativity and your zest for life. So don't let anybody put your sex off onto the shelf for you. If it's important for you, you will take the time, energy, and investment to get some help and support that's needed. And it's out there. It's out there. That's the cool thing. You don't have to make it up. It's already there. Beautiful. We are on to our last 2 minutes as we wrap up our last 10 minutes of time together. That's what I love about these life classes. They're 30 minutes. You have 30 minutes in your day, little golden nuggets. My partner's responsible for my turn-on. Whether it's a he, she, my partner's responsible for my turn-on. He just doesn't turn me on anymore. She just doesn't turn me on anymore, right? I hear this all the time. Busting this myth. You are responsible for your turn-on. You are responsible to it through your stress level and how you take care of yourself. Stress is the number one barrier to turn-on. Because what it does is it overactivates parts of our brain, especially the amygdala. And if your amygdala, which is highly connected to our pleasure zones, if your amygdala is firing and going off, your partner's saying, let's have some time together. And all of a sudden you're like, you know, how dare he ask me that? We just had a fight last night. Or your partner is asking you, you know, like, let's have some special time together. Let's have some sexy time together. And you're like thinking of the 10 things that you left undone on your desk at work. You know, these are things that impact our turn on as women for sure, because the clitoris and the activation of the clitoris is directly correlated with, are you able to sense it and have sensation and eventually get to orgasm? If your amygdala is firing and wiring, you are not. And so that's the beauty of like handling your own stress. But it goes beyond there. A lot of times when I'm coaching women, I share the portals that are available to your turn on. And there's lots of things. Like for me, taking a warm shower after a long day at work is a reconnect to my body. You know, it's actually switching out of my work clothes, moving into maybe something sexier, something that makes me feel good, but just even the warmth of the water on my body and the cleanliness of my body after a long day of sitting or sweating or doing some work around the house, you know, it's such an activator for turn on. But also music, and for me, and it's not for everybody, for me, candles and like getting the room warm and set up, those are things that I can do for myself or I can ask my partner to do for me that can activate my turn-on. And there's a ton of portals into your turn-on. And you, ladies, are responsible. It impacts your sex. It impacts your arousal. It impacts your pleasure. A great book, resource to look into is Come As You Are and Burnout, both by Emily Nagoski. The second one, Burnout, she also co-wrote with her sister. So we're on to our last myth. I struggled with this one. Like, which one do I want to share? Which one is important in my life right now? Which one is something that's kind of chomping at the back of my head, right? Because we live so much, so often in life with a lot of different myths that were fed to us by, you know, society, by media, by, you know, our parents, by teachers. Like, there's so many things out there that people have said to us to either scare us into believing it or from their lack of knowledge and ignorance or from just how they were raised, right? So this myth, I love this one because couples, I often will come in and say, I think I need to separate because I need to work on myself and I need to do that solo, right? And here's the thing that I often say. That's great. If you feel like my job is not to keep marriages together, my job is to keep intimacy and connection together. And sometimes that does mean that marriages need to part because of various circumstances, lots of different reasons that marriages or partnerships need to part ways, right? But you don't necessarily have to be solo to work on yourself. The beauty of being in partnership and working on yourself at the same time is that partnership actually brings something out in us. Again, I'm going to reference like Harville Hendricks and his wife, Helen McKelly Hunt's work around imago, and that there's two relationships in our life that have the biggest impact and have similar like wiring and triggering. That is the relationship of your primary caretakers growing up, usually your mom and your dad or your parents, right? And your partner. They trigger the same neural pathways. They trigger the same fears. They trigger the same themes and responses in you. And when you're in partnership, the beauty of it is that our triggers and challenges can often give us our little nuggets of the ability to learn something about ourselves, the ability to learn in partnership how to ask for what we want, the ability to learn how to be loved well if you allow that love in, if you open up to it. And so, no, you don't have to be out there alone working on yourself. You can actually dive in really deep, deeper than you ever thought in partnership and be working on yourself at the same time. Our partners can often be our greatest learning landscapes. And our partners can often be the person that actually can be our support person while we're working on ourselves. And so I think the beauty of it is that we come into these partnerships and that we continue to grow. And we either grow together or we grow apart at times and we come back together or we don't come back together, but that it can create this environment where you learn something pretty incredible about yourself that you wouldn't necessarily know by going on a solo journey. And I'm all for solo journeys. Like some of the greatest work that I've done in my life has been going on retreats by myself, going on trips by myself, taking myself out to dinner, spending alone time. Like certainly that is key to my learning of who I am. But the most that I've learned about myself have been the triggers and the landscapes about me that I find in my partnerships. And that's a beautiful thing. It's a scary thing, right? Because it means, you know, taking the leap. It means being super vulnerable. It means being self-reflective and not defensive. Like, ooh, you're right. I do that. Thank you for reflecting that, right? Yeah. All right. Those are the five myths that I want to share with you today. And I'm so glad that you joined me. It's been a really beautiful 30 minutes. My life classes are really dear to me. They're a treasure to create. I love my morning journaling ritual where I create most of these. And I would love to connect with you. I would love to connect with you and learn more about you and support you on your own journey to find more pleasure and passion in your life. Check me out at www.hotpinkyou.com. And there you will find a link about me where you can click on a free consultation. I'd love to drop in with you anytime to find out ways that we can ignite your life. Have a beautiful day. And for now, take care.